Greetings of love in Jesus' worthy name this morning. It's a blessing to see you all here and trust that the Spirit of God can continue to do his work among us and trust that our hearts are edified and built up in the most holy faith. although I was not originally planning to preach this morning, I was planning to preach last Sunday, and I guess God knew that the audience today was going to be here. And instead of who would have been here last Sunday, some of you would have been the same anyway. But this message is very real to me. And just because of a combination of circumstances in life recently, my mind's been on this subject. beginning last week, we had a machine in the shop, and we had to do a major modification on the machine. And it was a big job. It wasn't just a little job. And so we got the thing ready according to what the boss told us to do. And I was out on a forklift one morning, and the fella came around, the boss come around and says, "Hey, hate to tell you this, but the customer decided they want the machine to be put back to the way it was when it first came in here from the factory." And I knew that that was going to be a hard one, because to put all that back and make it all the way it was supposed to be originally was going to be a tough job. And I called my wife and said, "Please, I'm just having a little trouble right now. After all, this is not what we were hoping to hear." But during that night was the night that that young man was killed. And the next morning, that young 17-year-old, and he was a good friend of the fellow that's one of my co-worker the next day. Our boss, shop boss, wasn't there. He was off in a meeting all day long. And I figured, you know what? Today my job is to work with a young man who's deeply hurting for the loss of one of his good friends. In fact, has the same name he does. And so we're going to work together, and we're going to put this thing back together the way it originally was. And it was just one little lesson in life about how you deal with disappointments and possibly with discouragement. And that's the title this morning: Dealing with Disappointment and Discouragement. That was just a little story to illustrate a tiny, tiny thing that some of us experience day by day and throughout life on a very large scale, what disappointment and discouragement really can amount to. And there was quite a few others in working with some people and trying to give some advice and some counsel, some encouragement. And since one of the last sermons we had here was the ministry of encouragement, I thought, well, maybe it would be helpful to look at the opposite side of that just a little bit. Because the fact is, the ministry of encouragement is necessary because there are people who are disappointed and discouraged. And I'm just looking across some of your faces this morning. There are disappointments. Some are big and some are small. And some of you possibly this very morning are very discouraged about something. And it's very natural for us to face that. So what's disappointment mean? You know, we talk about some of these words and we have these ideologies of what they might mean, but what does it really mean? Disappointment means to fail to satisfy one's desire, wishes, or hopes. To fail to satisfy what we wish for, what we hope for, the desires we wanted. It's to prevent something from happening. So, somebody ever walk up to you and say, "I'm sorry to disappoint you, but such and such occurred." Feeling that one gets when you don't get what you hoped for or expected. That's a disappointment. The feeling that comes upon you when what you were hoping for, what you expected to get, just went into thin air and it's not there anymore. So then what does discouragement mean, or discourage? It's a lack of spirit or confidence. You just don't have the, I think there's a word that I'm not even sure if it's an English word or what language it is, they call a little gumption. You don't have much energy to do anything because of just feeling under the weather. Lack of spirit or confidence. To take away courage or confidence, destroy the hopes of something. So you had this idea, this was gonna work, this, do this and this and this, and the result will be this over here, and about that time, it's gone. And whew, oh my, how did that happen? Another meaning of discouragement, or to discourage, or how it happens, is repeated failure. Now this week I watched several people ice skating, and it's something that young skaters, they have a challenge there to try to keep them feet together and coordinate and move and mobilize. And the better they get, the better they get, it seems like. But some, it's tough. They stumble and get their feet all tangled up and down they go. And if someone is not there to encourage a young skater, especially someone that's not very coordinated, I'm telling you, they very quickly get discouraged. Now, I've fallen and cracked myself on this ice enough times, I'm going to quit it. I'm not going to do it anymore. And you know what? Sometimes when things are a lot more important than skating, people say, you know what? I failed here, I failed there, I failed the next time. I'm going to quit it. It's enough. And sometimes that means spiritual death. And that's why this whole subject is so important to me this morning. I say again, we want to be clear this morning that we all, at some point in life, are going to face valleys of disappointment and discouragement in our earth journey. But we need to deal with these things correctly to be successful in our earth journey. We're going to have to deal with it correctly to be successful. Deal with those disappointments. And them disappointments for a young child may be that their pet kitty got hit on the road. Or that they couldn't get a piece of candy when they wanted one. I mean, it might be an itsy-bitsy thing to us as adults. We go, well, that's no big deal. And yet for the child, it's huge. Disappointment, discouragement, and somehow or another, the level of disappointment as we go through life tends to grow. And we're going to look at that a little bit this morning. Lord willing, anyhow. It seems that some go through a time of disappointment and discouragement in life. And they, at the end of it, when they come out the other end of it, the other side of that valley, they're more sweet, they're more loving, they're more compassionate, while others seem to sink in despair and bitterness. So what can we do to face these challenges and succeed in what we're looking at this morning, dealing with disappointment and discouragement? So the first point this morning is a question. And I know that I have 3 points in the outline this morning, and I know that not everything is covered, okay? But just a few things that came to mind, and if you can share some more thoughts with us or give your own topic on it sometime, we'll praise the Lord. just a couple things came to my mind, but it's not an all-inclusive list. So number one, what causes disappointment and discouragement? First point is that the proverb writer says, hope deferred maketh the heart sick. But when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life. Now some of you know what it is to work with a horse and wagon. Or maybe you've seen a horse and wagon or horse and buggy. Now let's just imagine a fellow with a horse with his cart heading down the road, and he's got a fishing pole in his hand, and at the end of this fishing pole line, he has a sugar cube just about 6 inches ahead of that horse's nose. Or a carrot, maybe, depending what your horse really, really likes. And I'm going to tell you something. If that horse knows what that sugar cube means, he's going to run to get it. But the illusion is, and just for sake of information, the word disappointment in Spanish language is desilusionado or desilusionar, which gives the idea of a disillusion. It's something that it's right there, but you just never get it. And that's exactly the way we feel sometimes. We just feel like it's just a couple inches ahead of us and we're never quite getting there. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick. And after a while you say, I just cannot get there. It's just not working out. Physically I can't handle it. Emotionally I can't handle it. Financially it doesn't work. And it's just like the desire, the hope that we once had just goes into thin air. It's gone. And this gets real. Really real. So most young ladies have a desire. Most of them, not all, but most of them have a desire to have someone special to love them and care about them. And some of them have a strong desire to be a mother someday. It's something God put there. But what happens if that's not your case in life? Many young men have a desire to do something, find a special friend and begin a home. But what if that's not your lot in life? This thing of being single. I talked to somebody within the last year, and she told me this way, my wife and I, she said, I just hit a milestone this week. I just turned 40 years old. And I thought to myself, young lady, you've had dreams, and I know what some of them are because I happen to be not so distantly related to that person. Some of your dreams are beginning to go away, at least in some way. And some people like that, they start a courtship later in life, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And just depending how they respond to that. And there's probably somebody sitting here that's saying, if only I could change this thing right here, if I could change just this thing, it would be so different. And yet, it just never happens. It's just like an illusion. It just goes away, and you wonder, what in the world? If only I could change this, if my health was just a little different, if that were different, if I only had about another 10 grand in my account, it would probably change some of this stuff. So how do we deal with it? So what else causes disappointment and discouragement? When we invest time, energy, money, prayer, investment into something, and it totally crashes, totally fails. And this can be a garden. You work at it, you tilled the ground, you tried to keep the weeds out, and something wasn't right. I remember the first year we lived in Tennessee, the second growing year we were there, we did a tomato patch. We had grown tomatoes in Lancaster County, and as 13 we moved down there the first summer. We just had that field planted in corn. And we had a tomato patch probably the size of the entirety of this church building, state tomatoes. And when we got them plants growing, about that time they started to wither and die. And the sum total of that whole tomato project was one cardboard box of tomatoes. And what in the world went wrong? And I mean suckering tomatoes and tying those things up and making it happen. So what was wrong? Little did we realize that the farmer that had farmed the land the year before had sprayed atrazine on that ground. And that herbicide was still residual in the ground and destroyed that tomato crop. And all that worked for practically nothing. Gardens, a vehicle. You worked on it, you worked on it, you worked on it. And it still isn't fit to drive, or maybe after you just pulled it out of the shop, hit a patch of ice, and then the rest is history. Our trip plans, we plan to do this. We plan to see so-and-so. We plan to do that. We plan to travel here or there. And suddenly, someone gets sick, or somebody changes their mind, or plane flights just aren't flying right now, or you name it. It goes up in smoke and wonder, what in the world? It happens with courtship sometimes. investment in a person's life, and you prayed for this person, you loved this person, you loved this little child, prison baby, young person, you invested, you put time, energy, interest, and suddenly, ooh, what can we do? It can be heartbreaking. It can be rough. You invested in a congregation, a group of people, in a mission project, and suddenly you see, hey, you know what? This is not working out. It's just not going to go. The kite's not going to fly. And once you've invested time and energy and prayer time and investment like only God knows, and then it just like goes away, and you wonder, what in the world shall I do? How should I respond? Number three, when we try our hardest to succeed and it does not work out. You put it all, everything that you got into it. And some people try very hard. One time there was a family from Czechoslovakia that was planning to come to the United States. Poor family, tough times. And they came to the ports of England and stood there and realized that once that ship was full, there was no more space for them and their family. And they stood there and cried. Get this, catch this. 1912, April, 1912. Standing there on the ports and stood there as a family and cried together after they had put all it took to get from Czechoslovakia all the way over to England and watched the Titanic pull away. Never realizing that just a few hours or days and however much into that voyage, that ship would end up on the bottom of the ocean. And you know what? The next ship that came along brought them safely to America. And when our family and my youth, childhood, lived over here on Huckleberry Drive, just off of State Route 72, that lady that stood there as a little girl and cried was our neighbor lady named Helen Kuklich. So we knew her personally. And if that is your case, there's a little part of a poem that I found out, and I copied it down here. It says, "We cannot make bargains for blisses, nor catch them like fishes in nets. And sometimes the thing our life misses helps more than the thing which it gets." So what would have happened if the Kuklich family would have been on the Titanic? Would they have been among the handful of survivors? That question only God could answer. But maybe the thing that life missed helped more than the thing which it gets. Number four, when another person makes a mistake, fails, or skews what we desired or planned for. When another person makes a mistake, it wasn't my fault, it was their fault. They did this, they did that. And for that reason, this whole thing crashed. And sometimes we can just say, eh. And for that, because that person did such and such, we lost the game. And this grows with, and I could tell you a few other personal deep illustrations of where that happens. Maybe a church leader, maybe. And please, these things happen in life. And then, last but not least, in our first point of outline this morning, health difficulties, emotional challenges, and sometimes illness or accidents. And some of these things are things that we just have to deal with. Because of this sickness, because of this challenge emotionally that I'm facing, because of this illness or accident, and life is all different from now on. Because of another driver's mistake, I had an uncle who was paralyzed from his neck down. a quadriplegic. It wasn't his fault. But it was in an instant of time, he was a quadriplegic and was that way till he died. Tuesday a week ago, I have a dear brother-in-law with his wife and the family that was with him in Tijuana, Mexico. They realized that the prognosis and the situation he's dealing with is terminal. They packed the rags and flew back to Spanish Lookout Belize and gonna try to live the rest of life as well as they can, because he will not win the battle against cancer. And that's very close to us right now as a family. It's very real to them. They've tried hard, and some of these points apply to their case. A lot of money, a lot of investment, a lot of time, a lot of prayer. And it just, as of now, unless a miracle of God occurs, it's a terminal situation. Did anyone in the Bible ever face this kind of stuff? 1 Kings chapter 17. You may turn there if you wish. Elijah is in need of a place to stay and a place to get some food. Evidently, he didn't make a good bachelor. He needed to depend on someone to help him out. So God sends him to the widow at Zarephath. And I'm reading verse 10. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there, gathering of sticks. And he called to her and said, "Fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink." And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her. Hey, he called to her. And said, "Bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thy hand." And she said, "As the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but an handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die." And most of us probably know the in-between part of the story, that God provided in a very miraculous way. And the cruse of oil did not fail. And the flour or meal in the bottom of the barrel didn't quit until the famine was over. God just did a miracle there for that widow. And evidently she was able to feed her son and Elijah and herself. And evidently it went okay. But what happens in verse 17? And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick. And his sickness was so sore that there was no breath in him. This lady thought that she was going to make one more cake for her son, and that was going to be the end of his life. And what happened? God sustained him for 3.5 years, if you follow the story. And at the end of that time, after these things, after that all took place, her son gets sick and dies anyway. Now, what a incident. He survived a famine and a sickness took him. Of course, God had a way of helping her out. And Elijah brought him back to life. But not everyone's child comes back to life. That's just the way it is. Now go over to chapter 19. Just flip a page or so, and you're over to chapter 19. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, "So let the gods do to me and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die, and said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers." And he lay and slept under a juniper tree. Behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking on the coals, and a cruse of water at his head, and he did eat and drink, and laid him down again. And the angel of the Lord came again the second time, and touched him, and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee." And he arose, and did eat and drink, and went on in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. When did this happen? This happened after that tremendous victory on Mount Carmel, whenever he prayed to God, and the fire of God came down from heaven and consumed the sacrifice and the wood and the stones and licked up all the water that was in the ditches around it. And then he went and eliminated the prophets of Baal, 450 of them, one crack. He took care of it all. And then he went into a valley of discouragement. I'm going to tell you something this morning, and I might get to this again, but the fact is that the devil loves to attack us with discouragement whenever we have just faced a spiritual victory. That's just the way it works. And he says, oh God, I'm not better than my fathers. Take away my life. I've had enough. He says it in verse 4. And God, in his wisdom and his love for Elijah, says, he was just depressed. And he went down under a tree and went to sleep. And the angel comes and touches him and says, mister, rise up and eat. Here's something for you, divine provision. Did God ever come to you and say, child of mine, verse 7, this journey is too great for thee. It's too big for you to do by yourself. Arise and eat. Here's a word of encouragement. Here's a card in the mail that you just get right when you need it. Here's a text that somebody sends you just when you need it. Here, child of mine, the journey's too big for you, but go in this strength. Here's a special passage for you, and I love that. We heard in Sunday school devotions this morning, a verse in a time of need. God brought it to Brother Michael's attention there, right? Just in a time when he needed it, that verse. And it was an inspiration to us this morning. Amen. That's what God's plan is. So let's go on now. What can happen to us when we are discouraged? Second point this morning. Remember that like Elijah's story, the devil likes to attack us after a major victory. After a major victory. And I've heard men of God tell story after story about whenever they have preached a word in the evangelistic campaign and the movement of God was tremendous. And some men of the past who have seen that and felt that and known that. And the devil hits them hard and square immediately thereafter. I've seen and known about that type of thing a bit already in my life. And is it that way in your life? You won in a given situation. You finally got victory in this one that you've been struggling with. And the devil comes and lays it on. And, oh, what am I worth anyhow? And ourself, you know, it just goes down. It just goes sad. What can happen to us when we are disappointed and discouraged? Number two, we tend to become very self-centered. Self-pity can really get strong. Our tunnel vision is just like all we can see is the tunnel and maybe a foot or two ahead of our nose and it's dark and oh my. And we just get this self-piteous complex about us. And, oh my, it's just not worth it. I just don't know what to do and I'm not worth anything. And the devil just loves it when we get in that position because he knows that we're inches away from depression, from all kinds of other sad things when we get that feeling. And that's all he wants us to think about is ourselves. What happens to us when we're disappointed and discouraged? Number three, things that are otherwise quite small look like huge mountains. There is absolutely no way in the world I can handle this. And it might be a small thing. I think that illustration I gave at the beginning of that machine that we had to rework and stuff, because of what happened to my good friend and he and I worked on that, and a few hours later the project was all back to normal. He and I worked together and I tried to talk kindly to him and respectfully with him, work with him, just realize a boy that's grieving today, having a hard day, and thinking about what happened to one of his good buddies. And just that. I mean, in other words, it wasn't me anymore. It was trying to help him in that time. And he did a fantastic job in helping us get that thing back together. In other words, the day before it was huge, but that day it was small in comparison, right? So that's the way it can work. Number four, There's a little quote that goes like this. It's in a poem, but I don't know the poem. The outlook may be dreary, but the uplook is always bright. In other words, when we tend to look at the adverse circumstances themselves rather than look at the God who overrules in the adverse circumstances. It's a tunnel vision problem. When we get wrapped up in self-pity, our eyes are very much downward and sad. But we tend to forget to look up to the God of heaven, who is in control of all things and overrules in them. And even sometimes he overrules in our mistakes. Number five, it is so very natural for us to experience disappointments and feel discouraged. But you know what? The battle is either won or it's lost by our responses to these situations. These things are going to happen, okay? But the battle is won or lost by our responses. And I'm aware of what the clock says, but I guess this is just the way it is for this morning. But we're going to write down a few things on the board here. I just want you to think about responses to discouragement and disappointment. Our response can be, see, God's will and plan in a given situation. We can at least try to see it. Now, I'm not guaranteeing we will see it, because sometimes it looks totally stupid, totally senseless. But can we see God's will and plan? That God will, after all, is in charge of our lives. And if we can any way get around that one, it leads us to faith and trust. And whenever faith and trust comes alive, and sometimes this might be a journey in itself, and sometimes we wish it would happen quicker, but after a while we get to a level of victory again. Victory over that. But not all people respond that way. And maybe, although we wish for victory, it goes more like this. Lose hope. It's a hopeless case. Nothing to be said. It's a goner. And then, despondency. Despondency. And then, depression. And then, God forbid, but it often happens, bitterness. Bitterness. So we can decide this morning how it will be in our lives, in the experiences we're facing, and the challenges that are on our plate. Let's turn to Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations chapter 3, and I would love to just take the time to read the majority of this chapter. I am the man that hath seen the affliction by the rod of his mouth. He hath led me and brought me into darkness and not into light. Surely against me is he turned. He turneth his hand against me all the day. Listen to these words. Have you ever felt the way that Jeremiah is talking here? Have you ever felt this way in your experience? Notice what he says. My flesh and my skin hath he made old. He hath broken my bones. He hath builded against me and compassed me with gall and travail. He hath set me in dark places, as they that be dead of old. He hath hedged me about, that I cannot get out. Did you ever feel that way, dear friends, this morning? He hath made my chain heavy. Also when I cry and shout, he shutteth out my prayer. He hath enclosed my ways with hewn stone. He hath made my paths crooked. He was unto me as a bear, lying in wait, and as a lion in secret places. He hath turned aside my ways and pulled me into places. He hath made me desolate. He hath bent his bow and set me as a mark for the arrow. Imagine such a thing. He hath caused the arrows of his quiver to enter into my reins. I was a derision to all my people and their song all the day. He hath filled me with bitterness and made me drunken with wormwood. He hath also broken my teeth with gravel stones. He hath broken me, covered me with ashes. And thou hast removed my soul far from peace. I forget prosperity, and my hope is perished from the Lord. Remembering mine affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall. My soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me. Did you ever feel the way the prophet's speaking here? I really pity this fellow. He had a tough time. I could expound on that, and I should, but I'm going to go on. Notice something. Tunnel vision, all the negatives, all the things that are just not working out. But something happens here, 21 of chapter 3. This I recall to my mind. Therefore I have hope. Where does hope come from out of the midst of this? It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. So the Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh after him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. Do you see that up here on the top of the board? You see that? It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. He sitteth alone and keepeth silence because he hath borne it upon him. He putteth his mouth in the dust, if so be there may be hope. He giveth his cheek to him that smiteth him. He is full of reproach. For the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, yet he will have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies. For he doth not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men, to crush under his feet all the prisoners of the earth. To turn aside the right of the man before the face of the Most High, to subvert a man in his cause, the Lord approveth not. Who is he that saith, and it cometh to pass when the Lord commanded it not? Did you see that? Who is he that saith, and it cometh to pass when the Lord commanded it not? There's a lot in here. Out of the mouth of the Most High proceedeth not evil and good. Wherefore doth a living man complain, a man for the punishment of his sins? Let us search and try our ways and turn again to the Lord. Verse 55, I called upon thy name, O Lord, out of the low dungeon. Thou hast heard my voice. Hide not thine ear at my breathing, at my cry. Thou drewest near in the day that I called upon thee. Thou saidest, fear not. O Lord, thou hast pleaded the causes of my soul. Thou hast redeemed my life. O Lord, thou hast seen my wrong. Judge thou my cause. You could say a lot about those verses, but did you see? He had a possibility of going here. But in those verses, he went here. He could have gone down in despondency and depression. It sounded like he was awful close, right? He even talked about bitterness there. But somewhere in the middle of all that, he realizes that there's a divine plan engaged here. And we could go back and reread some of that. But just think about it. But in between there, he does recognize the sin that they're involved with and why it's so tragic and why God is punishing them. He's very real with that in this passage. I would mention that verse 31, 32, and 33 are of special interest to me and my wife. When Wesley was 1 year old, my wife's 48-year-old single sister passed away. And in 6.5 years' time, she lost her father, lost her mother, and then her oldest single sister. And her dear uncle Jacob Bartman from Spanish Lookout came down and preached the funeral sermon, and that was the text that he used. You know, after family's been standing by that graveside three times of close family members, in 6.5 years, you wonder what's coming next. Whenever that happened, and those verses still mean a lot to me, the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies. He doth not afflict nor grieve. He doth not willingly afflict nor grieve the children of men. Those verses mean a lot to us. And I, for lack of time, I'm not going to go there, but if you're taking notes this morning, jot down Psalm 130. Psalm 130 says, out of the depths have I cried unto thee, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let thine ear be attentive unto the voice of my supplication. In other words, keep me out of this low place. Keep me out of going down. When I'm feeling discouraged and disappointed, lift my eyes up unto thee, O Lord, I cry. Maybe you can, that could be a little meditation for you sometime. Psalm 130. Third point this morning, how can we work with disappointment and discouragement? I don't have a lot to share here, but I do have 5 points. Number one, recognize that disappointments and discouragements have been, are, and will be a part of earth life. We live in a fallen world. I repeat, recognize that these things have been, are, and will be a part of life. We live in a fallen world. That's just the way it is. This sounds easy, but it's tough. The first point here says, see God's will and his plan. Number two, surrender our will to the will of an all-wise, omniscient God. An all-wise God. A God who knows everything. In times like this, this quote has been used, and I've heard this a few times and tried to share it now and then. When it is useless to struggle, it is wisdom to yield. When it's useless to fight and struggle for my own will, it's wisdom to surrender my will. Did you ever sing that song, I surrender all? And how many of us have actually done it in the crisis moment? Surrender all. Surrender it all. John William Yoder was a good friend of mine for several years. He was a polio victim. He worked on a wheelchair and he hobbled around on crutches with leg braces, and I'm not sure how else would all happen in his body and so on. And he was sure, for sure, that he would never, ever, ever find a wife. He was sure that it would never happen. He worked at Rod and Staff Publishers, had a very capable hand in the work he was doing there, very capable brother, very knowledgeable brother. And he was very sure, and the doctor said, there's no way you're ever going to have any children either if you ever would get married. So he struggled and struggled, and he got very close to this and maybe lived there for a while. But one day he told God, I don't care if I'm single for the rest of my life. It will be okay. And he surrendered all. Just put it down. Put his own will down. And one day there was a young lady that took interest in his life, and he took interest in hers. And the amazing facts are that I think, if I'm correct right now, they had 5 dear children. And some of them are serving in foreign mission fields, very capable people in the kingdom of God, a beautiful family. But one day, John William Yoder surrendered all. You know him, don't you? Victor knows him. I think he might have been from the same community or church. And then he just passed away here about a month or two ago, or 3 maybe by now. Just an amazing story. When we surrender all, there's no telling what God's going to do. Number three, share your challenges with a person who cares and asks for prayer. Share your challenges with a person who cares and asks for prayer. That's the reason why God says in the book of James in chapter 5, confess your faults one to another. If you're down here, say so. Get somebody that cares and say it. Confess your faults one to another. And then what does it say? It says pray one for another. Pray one for another. For what reason? That ye may be healed. And move from here to here. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And then what illustration does he use? He goes right back to Elijah. And says, he was a man subject to like passions, such as we are. And he prayed. And then it says, what else happened? And then it says that how that if we pray for each other, we'll save a soul from death and hide a multitude of sins. Do you believe that this morning? Number four, remember to thank God for the blessings we receive even in the valley we're in. Remember to thank God for the blessings we receive in the valley we are in. Are there any blessings? Are there any good things that happen when we're disappointed and discouraged? If there's blessings, thank God for them. Look at them. The outlook may be dreary, but the uplook's always bright. Number five. Rest your mind and body as much as you can. And like one of the bishops of our conference told me one time, sometimes his mind is spinning this way and that way, and this problem and that problem, and this over here and that over there. He says, Virgil, he said, I've learned when I just cannot go to sleep at night, I've learned to discipline myself to lay as still as I possibly can. At least so my body can rest, whether I sleep or whether I don't. And he said that has helped him in the toughest times to be able to at least deal with it. Lie still and let the body rest, even though the mind is spinning rapidly. And along with that, rest your mind and body. Feed and nourish yourself spiritually, physically, and also emotionally. Because it just so happens that we need all three, don't we? Spiritually, physically, and emotionally. We need it, don't we? It's my heart's desire that if anyone here today is facing the challenges that we have been talking about, that this message could be a blessing and an encouragement to all who are present. May God add his blessing. Let's kneel for prayer.